Well, this hour, it's your turn. We're going to take your phone calls with Bobby Acart as we talk about the New Madrid earthquake, EMPs, and all these other things we've been talking about on Coast to Coast. And welcome back, Bobby Acart with us. Bobby, is it a matter of just not if, but when these things are going to happen?
We can apply that standard to all of these things. Every book series I've written, including the one of the most recent on the pole shift, the magnetic poles flipping, all of these things have occurred in nature and have occurred in history. And just because we live in a great society with all of the conveniences that we enjoy doesn't mean that the Earth doesn't stop changing. It doesn't mean that the sun stops shooting massive solar flares like the Carrington event. So you have these, you know, catastrophic events, whether they're naturally occurring or man-made, when nations fight with one another, as we discussed, and they will happen again. It's a matter of when, and it's something that we should always be prepared for.
Yep, absolutely. And when you're prepared for it, then at least you can minimize some of the damage in lives.
The pandemic is a great example. Those who had enough money saved to withstand the downturn in the economy or possible layoffs, those who, you know, stockpiled and prepared with certain basic things to get them through for several months, including toilet paper, of all things. You know, this is one of the things that has puzzled me from the beginning, that the toilet paper was taken off the shelves and everybody bought toilet paper. Coronavirus doesn't give you diarrhea, but by golly, we make sure we have plenty of toilet paper. And so, yeah, it's all a learning process. And this is again, why I do what I do. And I love to interact with my readers on Facebook. In fact, during the break, I was on the Coast to Coast AM Facebook page, and it's had a lot of interaction on tonight's post about the show. And these are people who really enjoy what you do by bringing attention to things that they don't normally think about, like the New Madrid seismic zone or EMPs and cyber warfare and such.
Well, we give them things to think about. You're right, Bobby, because most of the mainstream media, they're so concerned about the election and the sad situation with COVID. They don't get these other stories. They don't handle them.
Well, it's a part of being a responsible adult to be prepared for some potential eventualities that hopefully never occur. But if they do, you and your family can survive it, whether it be a short-term economic downturn, or it could be societal unrest, which has become a major issue in my opinion, or something even worse, such as New Madrid or Yellowstone, pole shifts, things of that nature.
Do we have the capability of monitoring and controlling people during these moments of either civil unrest or these events occur like a New Madrid fault earthquake and people just start going ballistic? Can we don't have the manpower to stop it all, do we?
We don't. And there's two aspects. First off, you have to have the willpower to do it. And then secondly, you have to have the manpower. What we have witnessed this summer is, and I was too young in the 60s to remember what those riots and protests were like. I've read about them and studied them. But what we have seen this summer is a level of mean-spiritedness, and more than anger, it's anarchy. And when something catastrophic occurs, I thought the pandemic would be a way to bring Americans together, like 9/11 was a way to bring Americans together. The pandemic divided us further to two camps, the mask versus the anti-mask camps, the lockdown versus the anti-lockdown sides. And so it seems that we're so polarized that if we truly had a catastrophic event, I would question whether we could come together or if it would make us rift apart further.
Let's go to the phones. Let's pick it up by going to John in Prairie Village, Kansas, to get us started. Thanks for calling, John. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Bobby.
Hi there.
Bobby, I'm excited to hear someone finally do something about the topic of the New Madrid fault, given the first time it was almost completely catastrophic of Cape Girardeau and St. Louis area. I'm here in Kansas City, and I personally felt tremors several years ago from earthquake swarms in Oklahoma. caused by hydraulic fracturing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, Bobby, if you have any opinion or have done any research into the potential effects of a New Madrid incident happening again, being exacerbated by the fact that we've injected hydraulic fracturing fluid deep into the earth, effectively creating a lithographic slip and slide, if you will.
Well, fracking certainly has had an impact on Oklahoma and parts of northern Texas, and in fact, there have been extensive studies done doing a map showing the impact of fracking upon seismic activity. The good news is that fracking in Oklahoma is in a totally different geologic area than New Madrid. And so there would not be a correlation between the two. Now, earthquakes could be triggered in Oklahoma as a result of a massive quake along the New Madrid seismic zone, but not vice versa. In other words, the types of quake activity that you have in Oklahoma, even in upper parts of Illinois and Indiana as a result of fracking, would not trigger something at New Madrid. So I think people can rest comfortable with that.
Bobby, so it cuts through Memphis up to St. Louis. How wide is it?
It's about 60 miles wide along the, you know, that part of the Mississippi River Valley. The faults run at a zigzag angle and kind of cut along that whole Tennessee border with Arkansas and Missouri. And then, as I mentioned earlier, it stretches just to the bottom of Illinois area, and then you get the Wabash Valley seismic zone, which is, you know, again, scientists now believe is connected to New Madrid. It's a separate seismic zone, but it's so close that, as I talked about, you know, fracking being related to New Madrid, there's no question, according to scientists, that if New Madrid were to have an earthquake again, it would impact and possibly trigger a quake in the Wabash Valley seismic zone in Illinois and Indiana.
It doesn't seem to have a lot of little swarms, does it?
No, this is a boom boom type of scenario.
Yeah. I mean,
you again using San Andreas, which in California area where everybody seems to hear more about in the news, you have these small quake swarms, and it makes headlines, and then everybody worries about the big one coming. You're not going to get that kind of warning. You might get a slight foreshock in the New Madrid seismic zone. But when it's ready to start to tear itself, it'll be big right from the start.
Iran seems to get a lot of earthquakes too, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about whether it's because of seismic activity or underground nuclear testing. I don't know if they're prepared for that yet. But yeah, around the world, there's certain regions identified with quake activity, especially around the Ring of Fire. If you recall, there was major underwater earthquakes that caused these massive tsunamis in India and then in Japan, which almost created a tremendous nuclear accident. Wherever these plate boundaries exist, quake activity is going to be prevalent. And the Ring of Fire is one of the areas that's also studied because it goes all the way along the west coast of North America, Alaska, then by Japan, all the way down to New Zealand, and you end up with massive, very large quakes that are very devastating to those areas.
Let's go to Albuquerque, New Mexico. John's with us, first-time caller. John, go ahead.
George Norrie.
Yes, sir.
You are totally awesome, dude.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good topic. Very interesting. Very compelling. Personally, I'm a U.S. Army veteran, and I've been living here in Albuquerque for a little over 5 years now, and I'm very close to downtown, central, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I originally grew up in Southern California, and I've experienced, now this was way back in the 70s, I'm 60 years old, the first earthquake I felt was a 5.6 or 5.8.
Pretty good size. Pretty good size.
Yeah, it was a shaker and very scary, and it occurred at 6:01 a.m. 1971. I was 11 years old. And since I grew up there, and I stayed there until I enlisted in the Army. That was in 79. So I left, went to Germany for 3 years, got out honorably, of course, and I went back to Southern California for like 3 months, and this is, 1980, mid-80s, and we had, in 3 months, and I'm not kidding when I say this, the first month, it was June or July of 1983, I think, and there was a 4.1. Next month, there was a 4.4, and they all occurred at the weirdest times, 4:22 a.m., 5:05 a.m., very early, and those are all the earthquakes I've experienced in my life, right there in California, and San Bernardino, actually, and my sister lives, like, directly on top of the fault line, and they're used to it. They're used to mild ones. They haven't got a real heavy one yet. But my question to your guest, George, is since I'm here in the Southwest, I'm in Albuquerque, is there any possibility of any seismic activity that would occur in this region of the United States?
Interesting take. Go ahead, Bobby.
It's very interesting that you brought this up, because at the start of the program, I mentioned how New Madrid is kind of one of these unsung, seismic zones. People don't talk about it much because there's San Andreas and it gets a lot of discussion. New Mexico actually does have a rift that the scenario is not quite as big as New Madrid, but it's very comparable. I think it was 1887 or sometime in the 1880s. There was a major earthquake in Sonora, 7.4. And had that earthquake taken place, in modern days, closer to Tucson, for example, or even Albuquerque, it would have devastating effects. So there has certainly been quake activity in the past along the Rio Grande Rift, which is there separating New Mexico and the Sonora area. And they estimated that quake in the late 1880s at 7.4. So it can happen. It can happen again.
And we used to have a geologist, a seismologist, who is not with us anymore, Bobby, Jim Birkeland, who used to predict earthquakes based on the full moon as well. Have you ever heard of that?
Well, they tried to have a correlation not only between lunar activity, but also between comet activity during the 1811 to 1812 earthquake sequence. That there was a comet passing by, and scientists have tried to establish a connection between that passing comet and the quake sequence. It's just one of those strange occurrences that happened during that 2-month time frame when everything shook the New Madrid zone.
Let's go to Judy in Paducah, Kentucky on the wild card line. Judy, go ahead.
How are you all tonight?
Okay, Judy, thank you.
I live on the New Madrid Fault.
Yes, you do.
Back in, I'd say around 1990, maybe, I was sitting there in the office talking on the phone to my sister who lived in Keokuk, Iowa. And things started swaying and shaking, and I said, "Holy cow, Lynn, I think we're having an earthquake." And about 12 seconds later, she said, "We are too."
Wow.
So, it just traveled right across to Keokuk in no time flat.
Any idea how big it was?
I don't recall.
Of course,
I do not recall.
All that information's accessible, isn't it, Bobby, if you know the date?
Yes, you can go into the USGS website, and if you can identify the date, it can tell you the quake activity for any region of the world, but especially in your particular region. And the Real Foot Rift, Paducah is right there at ground zero of all of this, because the Real Foot Rift kind of runs from Paducah towards Little Rock. And when these seismic waves occur, that whole region, and especially where she lives, would be impacted. It would be a good idea to possibly download the USGS app concerning quake activity, if you're concerned by it, or at least have a plan to know that if you have several quakes occurring, you know, possibly four shocks, it might be a good idea to head to a friend somewhere outside of Western Kentucky.
What's the difference, Bobby, between a quick shaking earthquake or a rolling earthquake?
Well, it's the seismic waves cause the rolling effect. Sometimes on these big screen movies, they get it wrong, and it's. I'll give you an example of one that got it right. It was actually a foreign film called The Quake, and they had a very good representation of what an earthquake actually looks like, especially an intraplate quake like New Madrid, where you have this rolling effect. It's like a wave, and the ground, you know, swells up and it drops back down. And what you have in California on these interplate boundaries is what they call a kind of a slip fault, where it's constantly rubbing against each other. Just imagine two bricks that are constantly being scruffed against each other. Some go up, some go down and back and forth. And those bricks will eventually wear on each other and cause friction. What would happen at New Madrid, it would be like the brick breaking.
Uh-huh. And, okay.
And then you have all of these things that occur underground related to liquefaction, you know, which is kind of it's a quicksand effect. And you have buildings that are built on sandy soils, and they're not necessarily built on solid bedrock.
It's like quicksand, isn't it?
Yeah. Imagine if you're standing at the edge of the ocean, and you got your feet in the sand, and the water laps up against your feet, and then as it goes back out, you'll notice that the sand goes with it, and you sink a little bit in. Well, that's basically the concept of liquefaction. And during a quake sequence along New Madrid, these buildings' foundations will change ever so slightly. Well, you take a 46-story skyscraper like the Met, and you start taking its base and causing the structural integrity of the building to lose or topple, then the building falls over and you create a domino effect in downtown St. Louis, for example.
Yeah. What do you think of the phenomenon of the tsunami?
Well, that's an incredible story. And it was so interesting to research that aspect from news articles and letters from the 1811-1812 time frame. That's part of the reason that Real Foot Lake was created, is you have the water from the Mississippi in what I call the fluvial tsunami flowing backwards, and it took water into areas that didn't exist before. Where there used to be lakes, many of those were drained because the ground was lifted. And where there were no lakes, like at Real Foot, they were created, and when the water flooded the region, it didn't go back. And it's the kind of thing that it's hard to imagine the Mississippi River flowing backwards, but that's exactly what happened in the last quake, major quake in February 18th.
God, I would have loved to have seen that. Bobby, stay with us. We're going to come back with final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Bobby Achart with us as we talk about the New Madrid earthquake. His book is called New Madrid Earthquake, and you're right there, too, in the Tennessee area, Bobby. You're right on that line.
Well, we actually do have, I'm a little farther east, but the thing about it is that this quake sequence could be so large, it could have a direct impact on, as we discussed with Oklahoma, any unstable part of North America where there are fault lines will feel the shaking of this earthquake sequence that could cause anything that's relatively unstable to begin to shake itself. And that's why it's such a major potential catastrophic event that FEMA identified as one of their big four, and they started the studies in 2006 and 2007 in earnest.
Let's go back to the phones. Edwina's with us in Spring Valley, California. Hi, Edwina.
Hello.
Welcome. Hello, hello.
Hello. George, my gosh, after all these years, thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine, and you're on with Bobby. Do you have a quick question for him?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I would like to know, because I'm not familiar with this Madrid fault, I would like to know exactly where It runs from and to north and south in the U.S., and I would like to know if they expect a quake. When do they, if they have any idea when they expect a quake to come? Because I can predict quakes before they come. I know. I did predict the Ridgecrest quake here in California, and many others. But this one sounds huge, and I just want to help. So I'm asking. That's what I would like to ask him.
Okay, well, he'll tell you where it goes and where it cuts through. In terms of when do they expect the next quake, nobody knows. But go ahead, Bobby, in terms of its location.
Sure. It's a very deep-seated fault. In other words, it's below the Earth far more than some of the other fault zones in the world. It runs kind of in a zigzagged fashion from the southwest to the northeast through Arkansas, Missouri, Tennessee, and Kentucky, right along the Mississippi River, in a very almost the center part of the country. And it's roughly 45 to 60 miles wide throughout the 125-mile stretch of the New Madrid Zone. And it's interesting because the fractures are covered by thick layers of rock, which were later covered by, you know, loose rock and soil material that in sediment resulting from the flow of the Mississippi River. And, you know, the Missouri River and Ohio Rivers are tributaries to the Mississippi. So, but then at the northern end of the New Madrid Fault Zone is where it connects potentially to another fault zone, the Wabash Valley in Illinois and Indiana. So you're looking at a stretch of probably 200 or more miles from, call it Memphis roughly, all the way to Evansville, Indiana, where this fault zone interacts, and it would devastate the entire region.
And when you talk about devastation, how bad?
Well, the bridges would be one of the big issues, but the buildings that are in all of this industrial activity, which takes place along the Mississippi, I mean, think about it. That is a major north-south highway, if you will, for goods and products and from Gulf of Mexico all the way to the northern states and back. And what you're looking at is all of these structures along the banks of the Mississippi would be subjected to liquefaction, and in addition to the shake itself, that including nuclear power plants.
Oh my God!
All of which,
yeah,
could be damaged as a result of a 7.6 to 8 magnitude.
Well, look what happened to Fukushima in Japan several years ago.
Exactly, and so when this earthquake takes place, and if it has a sequence of more than one, two to three, like what happened in the early 1800s, just as you think there's a respite, it could hit you again. And this is one of the issues I raised in the story, is that the President of the United States has to make a decision. Do I send in FEMA resources and National Guard and aid to these, you know, zones that were stricken by this quake that I wrote about, knowing that in 1811 and 12, there could be two more coming that are even larger than the first one? And so it makes for an intriguing conundrum for any administration that has to deal with a natural catastrophic event like this.
Next up, let's go to Dimitri, truck driving in New Mexico. Welcome to the program, Dimitri.
Hello, George, and hello, Bobby.
Hi there.
Thank you, George. A really wonderful work that you do to society.
Very welcome. Go ahead.
I have a two-part comment, theories that I have. One regarding a while back, an article I read on the web that diminishing magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one with a volcano in the Yellowstone. One regarding the magnetic field is the way that I see it is that the Earth ecosystem is in synchronicity with the life that was created, and then asteroids destroy it, create the fuel for the core that is carried by the tectonic plates, And then the diminishing part comes where humans depleting the resources that intended for the to feed the core. You know, you might think humans are puny, but, you know, oxygen begin with microscopic organisms. And there we go. We get the whole Earth with oxygen.
What do you think of the magnetic field situation, Bobby?
Well, I wrote about this with my series that released about this time last year, the Geostorm series. You know, there's been evidence of a rapid pole shift where the North Magnetic Pole has been shifting into Siberia.
That's right.
Toward Central Russia. And the poles have flipped in the past. And when the poles flip, I mean, it's something that other than GPS being, making mistakes and things like that, it could disrupt air traffic. But what this does is it weakens Earth's magnetic field substantially, so that even a run-of-the-mill ordinary solar flare could hit our planet when the poles are shifting and when we're in a state of weakened magnetic field, and that would just completely fry our electronics. So it's not so much that the pole is shifting, it's the potential threat of the sun and solar matter bombarding our planet during the process of the shift. And if it's a slow shift, our world could be subjected to these damaging solar matter and solar flares for a long period of time.
And we talked about Yellowstone, but give Dimitri a quick highlight again.
Well, Dimitri, first, before I forget, let me thank you and all of Georgia's listeners who are truck drivers. You guys kept America's economy moving.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Well
great
said,
rip.
Bobby.
Thank you so much.
Well said.
Super volcanoes have erupted in the past. Yellowstone has three times. It'll change the face of the planet, but it'll not only in terms of geography, but the ash and the debris that goes into the stratosphere will prevent us from growing crops in America's breadbasket for many, many years until it dissipates. And that would have a devastating effect on life.
Absolutely. And again, I echo what Bobby just said, Dimitri. Thank you, and all you truck drivers out there, police officers and first responders as well. John in Oregon, take it away, John.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, John, I hope you are too.
Yes, I am. I just want to say I was wondering when I was about 8, 9 years old, I was involved in one of the biggest earthquakes in the United States, a 9.2 up in Alaska.
That's huge, huge.
And I remember the day before I had a little Sheltie. And my mother kept saying, "What's the matter with that dog? What's the matter with that dog?" He was whining.
He knew it. He sensed it.
And everything else. Well, the next morning it hit. And we ran out of the house. And as we were running out of the house, the ground was going above us, below us. We were trying to grab a stop sign post. We were a half an arm's length from the stop sign, and we could not grab it. We watched our house go up, down, below us, the ground opening up around us. My mother was afraid that the ground was going to swallow us up. And then our house went down, and it exploded.
Jeez.
And we were on a hill. We were happened to be on a hill, and we kind of got our balance and stuff, and we watched the bay roll out and watched the tidal wave come in. I also have a home in Oregon on the Oregon coast, and the U.S. geological people come out to my property. There is a disc out there where they take satellite readings and they shoot to the satellite, and so they can tell how far the landmass has been moving from the plates. And it averages out about 1.5 to 2 feet a year. That's how far we're heading west.
It's moving fast. And let me address your question with Bobby about animals. when we had the Indonesian tsunami several years ago and subsequent earthquake that killed over 200,000 people, Bobby, the animals felt it first and headed for the hills. What makes them so sensitive?
Well, ground animals especially are more sensitive because this is what they do. They live in the forest, they live in the woods. Their feet can sense the seismic activity.
They feel the rumbling or something.
They feel it long before us, and over years and years of evolution, they know danger is coming and that they need to get to a safe place. We, on the other hand, we might think a rumble is a big truck driving past our house, down the street, or maybe an airplane flying overhead that kind of shook the windows. But animals have this inner sense just by virtue of living on the land, being attuned to nature, and they know when something's coming, and that's why a lot of people look to animal activity as a precursor to a quake swarm.
It's amazing how sensitive they are, isn't it?
Exactly, and I love this caller. And I could, if he's still on the line, I don't know, but
no, he's off now.
Okay, the 1964 Great Alaskan Earthquake, which he may be referring to.
That's the one. That's it.
9.2, and it was the largest recorded earthquake in American history. And it was known as a megathrust earthquake, and the tsunami and the damage caused by that quake. In Alaska's Anchorage in particular, was devastating.
I remember that as a kid. I remember reading it in the Detroit newspaper, and it was huge.
Well, at Port Valdez, Prince William Sound, the massive underwater landslide created by this quake not only resulted in deaths locally, but the tsunami just flowed all out from there. And this is what happens when you talk about Fukushima and other locations where you have these underwater earthquakes. The tsunami builds and the wave builds and builds and builds, and then there's very little warning before it hits the beach.
And if the water recedes dramatically, you know something's up, right?
Yes, and then you can see this during hurricanes. In Florida, when there was a major hurricane a couple of years back, the water was being sucked into the hurricane so much that it emptied a portion of Tampa Bay, where people near MacDill Air Force Base were able to walk out into where the water normally was, and they were standing on sandbars. This is how Mother Nature has the ability to impact the planet. And Mother Nature doesn't discriminate. She has no timetable. She's not on any kind of schedule. When she decides to do what she does, whether it be earthquakes or volcanic eruptions or major hurricanes, any of these natural events, it's going to happen, whether it's the middle of the night or the middle of the day.
Absolutely. Bobby, we only have about a minute and a half left. And your next projects, tell people what they can do and what your website is.
Well, the best thing to do to keep up with what I'm up to is to go to my website. It's Bobby Akart. It's akart.com. We keep that up to date with every new release. We announce, information on past releases, and you'll find everything right there. But if you want to go to Amazon, simply search my name in the Amazon search box. You'll see my 50 novels that I've published, both nonfiction and fiction. And then I'm on every social media, from Parler to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. Just type my name in, and I'm there. And I love to interact with people as I have time. I write about 9 or 10 books a year, George, so it's hard for me to...
Oh, you're prolific. Did you have fun when we did our Beyond Belief show several years ago?
I would love to invite myself on again, but I'll leave that up to you. You and I never seem to lack for subjects to talk about.
That's true. I mean, we do have a lot going on. Bobby, thanks again. You take care of yourself during this season, okay?
It's been a pleasure, George. Thank you so much.
Up next, I'll be talking to a spiritual counselor who deals with extraterrestrials. Oh, yes, that's next on Coast to Coast.